Thank you so much for tuning into the How We Rise Leadership Podcast, where we're redefining leadership and helping you step into the leader that both your destiny and humanity is calling you to lead and to thrive as a whole life leader and to lead all areas of your life well. If you are not currently subscribed to our podcast, whether or not you listen to them on iTunes or Spotify, please click subscribe so you can get alerts on new episodes. Typically, we drop new episodes on Wednesdays, and that way you can get alerts. If this podcast is supporting you, we would love for you to leave a comment, which then helps us get our message out there to more people. And the last thing is I want to gift you with a chapter from my book, This Is How We Rise. It's the resilience chapter, and it really has all these amazing tools to help you turn obstacles into opportunities and to help you reframe around challenges. So you can subscribe for our newsletter at shesummit.com. That is shesummit.com. Sign up for our newsletter and you will get a free chapter of our book. And again, thank you so much for being part of our She Summit community and the How We Rise community. And just for those of you who don't know Alicia, she is an actress, producer, and activist. She's won a SAG Award for her incredible badass role as Natalie Fig Figueroa. Am I pronouncing that right?
Figueroa.
In Orange is the New Black, which has, you know, been a huge hit series on HBO. And she's also produced, she was producer on the incredible film Equity, and talked about, you know, these incredible female bankers on Wall Street. And I love the sort of female protagonist roles that were in that Equity film, and also amazing films like Egg. And she is also an original member of Time's Up and an ambassador for a lot of women in media initiatives. So Alicia actually spoke at She Summit a few years ago, and we were just joking earlier that when we first met, it was like we were literally talking, and we're like, you're literally saying everything that's in my brain. And we just immediately connected. So, and I, like, to me, Alicia, you truly have such an incredible presence and just energy to you. And it's just something that when I think about just all the extraordinary women that I know, you've always really stood out to me in that way. So thank you for being, you know, in this conversation with us.
It's so funny, because as a woman, I want to be like, no, you're like that. But so I'm learning how to go, thank you.
But isn't it incredible that women struggle with compliments? Yeah. Like, what's up with that?
It's really, really hard.
And I think back to, we were talking about worthiness, and I really believe that we have also this, as women, we connect our self-worth with our productivity. And back to this conversation, which is about how do we rise through creation, and the creative process can be so powerful. And if anything, it unleashes productivity. And we need to go through these different periods of creation and destruction. And I'm thinking the five acts of Shiva now from my yoga classes, but in terms of just the phases of creation and how powerful that is. So tell us about the creative process and some of the tools that you learned.
You know, I learned two pieces. One that I think is most relevant to now, which is the importance. It seems so counterintuitive in a way, but the importance of self-care. And for me, like, it's such a buzzword. It's like, oh, that's annoying. Like, what does that even mean? But really, like, doing what I need to do to take care of my mind, body, and spirit is everything. And what I've found, particularly in this moment, and it's funny that so many of us, including myself, are parenting and homeschooling in a way that we never have ever before. You know, it's 24/7. I was making lunch for my family right before this. And a big piece for me is owning that I am my own parent now, and that no one's going to parent me. Even, you know, bless, I love my parents. They're very far away right now, out of all of our own safety. But there's this mourning of this period of like, oh, my parents are not going to parent me right now, and I have to parent these other people right now. And really reparenting ourselves in this moment is like a big thing that I learned in my early 20s. And I'm going back to that toolkit of like, how do I really take care of myself in this moment? And what does being a good parent to myself in this moment look like?
That's powerful.
Yeah. And it feels that way. There's a lot of like minutiae to that, be it, you know, what does self-care look like on a daily basis? Is it, you know, and for everybody, it's going to be different. For me, I have to move my body every day. That really works for me. I have to find that time to go for a little run or do a little yoga. I have to move. I bought a mini trampoline during this period of time. And that's been so joyful, both for me and my daughter. Like my daughter, it came about a week ago, and we just, both of us had just needed that extra like boost of something. So moving my body is a big piece of it. Soul is a big piece of it. Like, and again, that can mean so many different things for so many different people. If it's yoga, if it's meditation, if it's listening to a podcast or listening to something that like really feeds your soul. I love Tara Brach as someone, or Deepak and Oprah have an amazing meditation set, like whatever it is for like feeding your soul. Mm-hmm. And then feeding my mind is also a big piece of it, like as you talked about education. And then the other thing that I really started when I was not working and couldn't get an agent and was sort of my own boss, other than the restaurant and modeling job that I had, was every day I would do something as an artist. And for me at that time, it could be reading poetry. It could be walking through the park and smelling the flowers. It could be going to a museum. And that was about like feeding the well as a creator. And guys, that can be like 5 minutes a day if, you know, in these busy times when we are homeschooling and we are working, it can be like, what little thing can you do? You know, for me, I have I have crayons right here, and it can be as little as like making a little card, because that makes my little girl, my little heart feel good. And then actually this ended up being a project that I did with my daughter. And we made these little cards that we're going to send to people who are alone in like elderly centers or there's a word I'm looking for, nursing homes. And I just thought of writing in them, though you may be by yourself, you're not alone and you are loved. And I swear to you, just like doing that for 5 minutes made my heart swell. Just, you know, thinking about sharing love with a stranger. And that's another piece of this moment is like, how can we serve even from home, even if you can't make a mask, you know, these little ways that we can feel part of a community and feel of service. And then, so there's one for the artist, or you know, for those of you who are not artists, those of you who like, one for you as a creator, one thing for the artist in the business. And that, like we talked about, is sort of like more educational. So for me, back in the day, that was going to an acting class, going writing with a friend, something like that. And that I would translate to something like this, where it's learning. Part business, it's learning. It's part your business, but it also feeds your heart, you know, and finding those ways where those two things intersect. Networking can be that if it's educational too. And then the third thing is one business action a day. And usually one business action for me at that time as an artist really scared me. So like something that scared me, like calling an agent or writing a letter to a director I loved or something that was like, oh, I don't really want to do that. And doing one of each of those things every day, one for the artist just to feed my soul, one for the artist in the business, and one for the business, helped me at the end of every day go like, okay, that's what I've done. I really did some things today. And that's really helpful, particularly, I mean, those of you who are working, bless, you know, that's so much gratitude for that. But there are a lot of people I know right now who are not working, and finding the structure in their day is really challenging.
So to summarize what you just talked about, and especially given this audience, which is most of us are in corporate positions, I know there's a few health and wellness folks in this community, but it is almost to sort of pull out the nuggets here in those sort of three areas. Is one is feeding your soul, and feeding your heart and your soul is so important. And you know, at a certain point, like your soul just can't be neglected, right? And that is, and I think for a lot of us, because we're in the operations of every day, just to, you know, again, deliver what we need to do for our work and our families, and like we're so in operational mode, but our souls can only be neglected for so long. And so finding that, you know, those opportunities to, and like, again, that could mean something different for depending on, again, what your passions are, but it could be, you know, learning, it could be yoga, it could be meditation, it could be time with your family, but feeding your soul is so important. The other piece that I heard is really feeding the mind and growing and learning. And it's sort of like a harder task, right? Versus something that sort of feels good, but like, hey, the mind piece takes a little bit more work. And the other one, the third one I heard that stood out to me for this audience is really this random act of courage or kindness or outreach, you know, is, you know, it, you know, to actually make the effort and do something that you're uncomfortable doing. And it could just be checking in on somebody or, you know, reaching out to a senior person in your organization or an external person, and just something that pushes yourself to grow and to create. So that's just for this audience. I was thinking, you know, what would be so relevant is that we need to find that something every day that feeds our soul and that also feeds our mind and that also feeds our connection and outreaching to others.
And I was just thinking as you were speaking about like a way to marry some of those ideas is a way to feed my soul is a gratitude list. Like gratitude lists really help. I really believe in them. I have a group of women and we actually send each other our gratitude list, and it really helps us. Like you see something on someone else's list and you're like, oh yeah, I'm so grateful for that too. I wouldn't have thought of that. You know, like little things like chocolate chips.
It puts you, yeah, gratitude puts you in a posture of not scarcity, but abundance.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that when we're stressed and we're like, oh my gosh, like there's like only, it's already 5 o'clock and I didn't get all these things done, or, you know, like every task or things are just layering on top of other things and we sort of feel out of control, it's like this time scarcity and the stress. So abundance puts us in a posture of abundance and focusing on all that we do have. So that's a soul feeding task.
Yeah. And one thing that someone mentioned to me recently was, well, write a list of people you're grateful for and think about 50 people. And then if you haven't talked to some of them in a while, one a day, just write them a little thank you note. And that's that kind of thing of that, you know, what back in the day was my business thing that is applicable to anybody of like who, think about 20 women or men who really helped your career and really gave you that recommendation or gave you that next like opening or vouched for you. This is a lovely time to write them a little thank you, you know? Definitely. And do it with your kids. Like, okay, if you're like, okay, I don't have time for that right now. Thank you very much. Yeah. Like, oh, what a fun thing to do with your kids. You guys, you know, you can do it on your email and your kid can draw and do it for one of their friends, because we all need that feeling of connection and gratitude right now.
Right. And I also want to talk about just, I think that thing that makes you so happy on the weekends, you know, and it is, or that thing that makes you happy, or that reading the book or doing something creative. I think oftentimes we feel like it's almost like we're treating ourselves, and like that's something that we just don't deserve right now. And instead, it's actually doing more of those things, because we feel like we need to just be always focused on the thing that, on the activities that are going to keep us surviving and producing and getting our paychecks and just all of that from that scarcity posture. And instead it's the sort of jumping like a kid, or like drawing or reading or whatever it is that makes you happy. Like double down on happiness, double down. And usually that comes from a place of creativity. And this is such a good time. I know some of you might feel like, are you kidding me? There's no time to create right now. Like, I'm like barely surviving being like a housekeeper, being a chef, and like a homeschool teacher, you know, so I don't really have the time for that. But make the time for it, or make one of those activities a creative process. And also oftentimes when, you know, clients of mine have gone through transition, I always say like don't create this operational strategic plan for yourself right now. Like, be an improv, like create time for that improvisational fun and like soul feeding activity, because it's where actually the innovation comes from. And that's going to be a big piece that I'll talk about later, which is, you know, seeing this time of overwhelm, reactionary, you know, activities, and where we're like chaos and it's messy, like embrace the mess and see this as a period of innovation that's happening for you. So it's not chaos that's happening to you, but it is a period of life innovation that is happening for you. And what is the good stuff that is going to come out of the season of life for you, and focusing on that. And it's a creative process. Like, chaos is creative, and creativity is chaos. And maybe some of your best innovations in your workplace, maybe this is a time to disrupt corporate culture and whatever cultures that we are in, and actually call stuff out, because we in a way have the permission to do so right now. So I want to talk about, like, when you wrote Equity and you produced, you're saying like you love acting, but producing is when you want to change stuff, like change the world. And Equity and Egg were two films that you produced. Can you just also share like some of the creative process that was like unplanned that led to that?
Sure. You know, with Equity, we came up with an idea and we hired a writer and we hired a director and we raised all the money and we got very, very fortunate. We ended up at Sundance and sold it to Sony Picture Classics and got to make our investors 115% back within a year, which was really amazing. And for me, the only reason I produce is to change the system. So I act to feed my, like, that's my heart's desire. It's what I was, I feel like, put on this earth to do. But producing is about being a change maker, because I can't change the system. But if I make a movie where I hire all women, if I hire all women behind the scenes, if my crew is 70% women, which I did on Egg, if every single head of department on Egg was a woman, I am changing things. And not only am I changing it for that movie and that story that we told, because it was also a very feminist story, but, and you can see both of these movies on iTunes and Amazon now, and Egg is 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, which is kind of exciting. And it came out just in 2019. Christine Hendricks, Anna Camp, I'm like going into like commercial mode now. Not only do we tell a story about women for women, but the women who worked on it then were so deeply inspired to go do it more. And I'll tell you two stories. One is our cinematographer had never been given the opportunity to shoot a feature film. She brilliantly talented, but no one would give her the opportunity. And she was in her 40s, a mom, and was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And felt like really was right there. And then we were like, we want you. And has gone on to shoot many features, had another film just at Sundance this past year, and has gotten to shine. And when you give an opportunity to another woman in that way, there's ripples to that effect. Another young woman who was a production assistant, like a PA, which really is almost like an intern, not really, but it's a paid internship essentially on a film. And she wrote us like 6 months after working on our film and said, you know, I've had some really hard times on more male driven films, and there was some sexual harassment and it was really, really uncomfortable. And had I not had the experience of working on Egg, I may have left the business. But working on Egg showed me what's possible and showed me the dynamic and the community that is possible.
And tell us more about that. Like what happened? Just if you could give like a one or two sentence on what Egg is about for the audience that doesn't know. And what is that thing that kept, that was just so powerful?
Well, I think Egg is a dramedy. It is sort of like a modern day Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I like to say if you take art and commerce and parenthood and career and draw a Venn diagram, this movie explodes in a dark comedy where those four things meet. And the reason that woman felt that way was it's incredibly rare for a film set to be more female driven. It's incredibly rare to have female heads of every department and a 70% female crew, and to feel as a woman heard, even if you are in the sort of quote unquote lowest position on set, and to feel respected and that everybody's like a big family, that we all take care of each other and watch each other's back. That's not the way every film set goes. So I think that's why she felt that way.
And when you're sharing the story about also the crew members that were impacted, and I want to say this to this audience as well, because you know some of us are paid, we're in paid positions where our work has to do with shifting culture and creating more inclusive, diverse, impactful, socially impactful workplaces and businesses, and that's our day job. But for many of us, it's volunteer, right? And it's a volunteer, unpaid position that we do on top of our paid role, whether you're like in marketing or product or engineering or project management, so forth. So, but it is that, and in a time like COVID-19, it almost feels like you got to sort of like cover the basics, and there's no time for social impact. There's no time to actually like serve right now. And really it's just survival mode. But I actually want to challenge all of us to see this again as a period of innovation where, as we talked about the last call, Dr. Valerie, is boundaries have been dismantled and structures are being completely renovated right now. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the future of work is really unpredictable. And yes, many people are going to get laid off, but many people might not go back to work. And so this is a real opportunity. It is when there's breakdowns where we can have the breakthroughs. And so these are the opportunities for every single one of us. And I say that, like, I really pride myself on the She Summit community, because we're really supporting this community of change agents, and that you are all change agents, and that you are all leading change for your specific movements. Again, whether you're an entrepreneur, intrapreneur, hybridpreneur, whatever pathway you're in, and that this is actually an opportunity to lean in on leading change and actually voicing ideas. Because at the end of the day, it's all about humanity. And if we see a problem and we see something that could be solved, to actually, you know, this, like, back to your artistry and back to your, like, as a time of creation and outreach, like when you wrote a random letter to an agent or a producer or a director, right? Like, this is the time to take that risk, because, you know, I think also I'm speaking to a lot of HR professionals and senior leaders, and I think they're all really, everybody's really open right now to feedback and open to community and connection. And so I wanted to say that. And then the second thing is that impact, and this is a big one, is that impact is more than often invisible. You know, like we do, like you have no idea how much influence you have, and that you could do, like, the thing that you exhaust yourself doing, that initiative in your workplace, or when you came up with the idea of equity and you collaborated, Alicia, with, you know, your coworkers on creating that film. And yes, like you have this expectation, we're going to put this out into the world. We're going to launch this programming for our employees. We're going to launch this new offering for our, you know, for the marketplace. And you just assume and you hope for impact, right? But oftentimes the connections that are made, the seeds that are planted, the actions that come out, the positive actions and transformations that happen to individuals, like there's probably just such an exponential amount of impact that all of us have had. And so it's so important that, because impact is often invisible. So for those of us who are driven by impact, we get exhausted by doing the work because it's such hard work. Culture change is really, really hard work. But in many ways, we need to know that just trust that we are making that impact. And if you are receiving impact, take the time to acknowledge and share with the person or the organization who's impacted you. Like, send them that random act of kindness or that email. Like, my friend Antoinette Hamilton is head of D&I at Lam Research, and she sent me a message after last week and just said, Claudia, that was an amazing call. And, you know, it's like sort of gave me a word of affirmation, right? And even though I, you know, we're getting amazing feedback, like those messages matter. And so in this time of creativity and innovation, I wanted to just sort of share that as you were talking about the impact of the crew members.
I love that.
So Alicia, I wanted to talk about like the part what you said about the part where you were talking about anxiety and depression. And for us to share that vulnerable story, I think that would be super helpful for the audience. So can you tell us a bit more about that and how creativity and this sense of play and artistry also helped you through that?
Sure. You know, I will say when I first started, I've been reading and actually been listening a lot to Brené Brown, and I love her because it feels really good to listen to her right now, but she's not woo-woo at all. She's all about the data and data-driven. And one of the things I was listening to her talk about recently was people who are overperformers or underperformers during stress, and like knowing who you are. And I am a classic overperformer, which is really the way I like express, and it's what you were talking about, like during the more chaos, the more I pick up to do, and the more I'll take away things from other people to do. I'll be like, I'll delegate, and then I'll go do things by myself, which, by the way, not a good idea for your coworkers or your family. Like, it just makes everybody around you feel icky. So recognizing that, you know, I think one of the first things about anxiety is recognizing who you are during challenging times and recognizing your own behavior. You know, you have to be aware of it to change it, and then accepting it and like fully loving on yourself in that moment, not going, you know, because for me, I'm really good. My sweet husband many, many times will be like, okay, put the hammer down, dude. You know, stop beating up on yourself for however you are in this moment. And it's especially in this moment, we're all gonna be imperfect and messy. It's chaos, as you just said. So once we, you know, become aware of our behaviors and accept our behaviors, and then what actions are we gonna take? So for me, I, as an overachiever who does so much, it was about slowing down. For me, anxiety is about tools to slow down, be it meditation, be it yoga, be it writing. I love morning pages. I cannot tell you how much like dumping my negativity first thing in the morning, because my truth is when I'm awake and functioning, and I'm a functioner, I'm an over functioner, I'm great. And I can even go to sleep pretty well because I'm exhausted at the end of the day. And then I wake up at like 2 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning, and my brain wants to start going again because that makes me feel safe. And acknowledging and learning and working the muscle of we are in a deep moment of unknown and a deep moment of uncertainty. And there is nothing that will change that. Like nothing you can do. I can wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and want to plan the meals for the week because that makes me feel safe. That's not going to change when my city is going to reopen after this pandemic. And I have to see like, sweet girl, that's what you did when you were a little girl. When, you know, nobody was taking care of you enough, you felt safe by over planning. You know, that made you feel safe. Writing letters in my head at 3 o'clock in the morning makes me feel safe. And saying like, okay, that's not a useful tool. Listening to a meditation at this hour is a useful tool. You know, learning how to relax your body and get back to sleep and self-care is a really much more useful tool. And I heard something recently that I love deeply about this moment, which is it's like we're all on a meditation retreat that we didn't know we signed up for. And I loved that so much because I was like, but I could say I sign up. You know, like I could say, I'm here. I'm getting a free meditation retreat. Let me sign up. Let me see what I can learn and how I can grow in this moment. And for me, having actually been on meditation retreats, what I have learned and my truth in this moment, and this might not be applicable to anybody else, is if I live in the past, I hope I'm allowed to say that on here.
Yeah, please, go for
it. If I live in the future, same. I have to be fully present in the now more than I ever have in my life. If I start to look at why aren't things the way they were, so not useful. If I start to go to like, how can I grasp, what's going to happen? So not useful. Being in the moment and moment to moment, how do I take care of myself? Put on the oxygen mask first. And then how do I take care of my family? And how do we rise and thrive? I mean, like life is really good one day at a time.
Yeah, and I love what you're talking about in terms of like, we can't control the past and we can't control the future. And so many of us live in either the past or the future, right? But the power comes in the present and comes in the surrender to the present. And I've also heard folks say how, like, you know, when you're living in the past, it's like you're the regrets of the past and like beating yourself up about things about the past is like, that's where depression lives. Mm-hmm. And the worrying about the future.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Where the anxiety lives, but it's in the present. Like in many ways, like for all of us to be so mindful, and mindfulness is the 13 foundational pillar of personal leadership and the How We Rise curriculum and book and course, is because it's really after you learn everything, mindfulness is the tool, it's the muscle, right? To catch yourself and to like, where are you placing your thoughts? Because there's 60,000 thoughts a day and we become what we think. And if we're living in the past, we're living in the future, like we're really letting that steal away our life. Like our life is getting stolen because it is in the present. Like we just have today. How do we take today? Like what matters the most is today. And how do we, in any moment, right? Because then we're just sort of wasting today and we're basically giving our life away.
You know, you said something so powerful earlier about in this moment where there is such deep unknown and such deep uncertainty and chaos, as you said, the beauty of it is the freedom of it, of what's possible. And how do we reimagine corporate structure in the future? Because what's happening, like what we've learned, is a lot's not working. So how do we imagine what could be working? And what I know to be true is that a lot of times it's when I'm watching, you know, some dance or nature, you know, I'm looking out my window right now at some deer. And when I'm, you know, drawing a shell, or ideas that had never come to me before come to me, and honoring that, that sometimes creativity comes, and ideas that actually do come back to your work come in those times when we're just trying to feed the well.
Yeah, I love that. So focus on the positive, everyone. And thank you so much, Alicia Reiner, for joining us and blessing us with your energy and your grace and your wisdom. And thank you, everybody. I see Ellen and Antoinette and all my girls. And I just want to thank everyone again. And thank you, Alicia, so much for joining us.
Thank you.